Labor Day edition of Weekend Huddle, broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning, Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly BI membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Happy Labor Day to you. Happy long weekend. Happy Victory Monday to those who celebrate. Connor Newt, Nick Frazier, Parker Kelly here with you this morning. We are on the air from 9 a.m., which is right now, to 11:30, taking you right up to some MLB baseball. But as I mentioned, happy Victory Monday to everyone in this room.
It's wonderful.
We all get to celebrate. Look at that.
We all do get to celebrate. Every team in the SEC gets to celebrate except for two, which we will talk about in depth here shortly. Kentucky gets the win over Toledo. They looked really, really bad, but a win is a win. Mississippi State looked all right.
They looked okay.
They looked all right. Blake Shapen.
Fingers up for that. Thumbs up. I'm optimistically concerned about this team, but as I said, they're going bowling this year.
Optimistically concerned.
That's two words I've never heard mentioned together.
Right.
Yeah. Optimistically concerned.
That's something different, but I appreciate the ingenuity for
that. Wrap
right
your
there.
Young heads around it, okay?
Yeah, just you are.
Maybe you should trademark that. You should trademark that. Start selling t-shirts.
Sure.
Optimistically concerned.
Can we start calling you Unk now?
Since sure.
You're technically the elder.
I'm fine with that. Call me Unk.
Unk.
Unk Crane. I don't know.
Wow. Look at what Parker's done to the stream. That's interesting. Yes, Victory Monday. Of course, Kentucky, Mississippi State getting the win. The Vols look great offensively. And to even further sweeten the deal, if you stayed up and watched Pac-12 after, I mean, Big Ten versus Big 12 after dark with two former Pac-12 teams, you saw how bad Nico Iamaliava looked. I mean, very, very bad. So I think you may have won the breakup here. You may have won the divorce settlement.
He did the exact same things that he did at Tennessee last year, overthrowing receivers, getting to his first read, starting to freak out a little bit. Now, I will say, I wasn't like most Vol fans and hate watching Nico, although it was kind of fun to see him do bad. But I wanted to see Utah, man, because you know they're my dark horse team.
Yeah.
So I wanted to see how Utah did, and sure enough, 43-10, pretty good win for them.
Yeah, the Utes are a good ball club every single year. Their defense always shows out,
yeah.
But I think we all know the real reason, minus the financial gain or financial loss in some eyes when it comes to Nico going out to UCLA. The guy didn't want to play against SEC defenses anymore. Let's be honest.
I just don't think he's a very good quarterback.
No, and that's what I'm saying. Like, in the SEC, if you're Nico Iamaliava and you stay, you ain't surviving, buddy.
I mean, there were times where they panned to his face, and he looked terrified. Like, he looked, like, scared to death. Like, you know that meme of the, I think it's Max Duggan, actually, the TCU quarterback where his hands are just shaking? That's what he looked like to me. He looked horrified to be out on that field. And, like, it's not like he had a crowd advantage. Did you see the attendance numbers at the Rose Bowl this week?
Looked very low.
Very, very low. Speaking of attendance numbers, minor rant here, and I think it's a negative rant, but I think everyone can agree with me. Tennessee and Syracuse should not have been a neutral site game. That is one of the biggest state. They played in Mercedes-Benz Stadium, of course, in Atlanta. One of the biggest capacity stadiums in the NFL. Seats over 100,000. Do you know the attendance number for that game?
I know they hold a total of 80,000.
Okay.
Right? It was 70, right? 70,000 fans?
Oh, well.
In Atlanta?
Still.
No, I'm talking about attendance on Saturday. 70,000 people in attendance. Or was it lower?
Over the weekend, maybe. For the Tennessee game, 45,000 people.
Wow.
Bad.
It's a little low.
Now, if you play that game in Neyland, you're getting 102,000 people. I would sign up for a home and home.
They sold out ETSU next week, so of course, yeah.
A game in Neyland, and then you can go to the Kibbe Dome next year, and I think you wouldn't get the same attendance numbers you would get at Neyland, but that's still, I'm sure the Syracuse Orange people would show up. I think that's a bad look on the NCAA's part.
Well, I mean, that's the NCAA trying to get their piece of the pie. I mean, you got to look at it. You have all these teams, universities that have this big fan following. UT is one of them, Tennessee,
mm-hmm.
And they're not showing up for those games because primarily, who wants to travel to Atlanta for a game against Syracuse? Like, if you're a Tennessee fan, you're like, oh, don't worry, we'll go to the one up in Knoxville because we know they're going to beat Syracuse.
Yeah, I had a friend that was out. You had a friend too. Christian Skelton went out there. I asked him, because he was out there, I was like, what is the ratio of, I know they're both wearing orange, but what is the ratio of Tennessee fans to Syracuse fans. And he's like, honestly, man, it's like 90 to 10 in favor of the Vols. And I was like, it makes sense because Georgia's probably about a five-hour drive from Knoxville. Syracuse is like a 17-hour drive. Those fans, unless they are absolute diehards or they live here in the area, are not traveling all the way down to Atlanta, Georgia to watch a loss. That's just not how it works.
And I've met one Syracuse fan in my life, and that was at a football camp. He was actually from Syracuse. But who from Syracuse, New York, is making the trip down to Atlanta?
No one.
And especially a game you don't feel confident that you're going to win. Just not going to happen.
The other game was last night, which was a phenomenal game. I'll say this. As far as the top-ranked matchups this weekend, I was very disappointed in how those games actually played out because they were all low-scoring and not a lot of offense going on. Texas and Ohio State comes to mind for me. LSU and Clemson was low-scoring, but at least that was a close game, I thought. Last night, right in the middle, Carson Beck looked good. CJ Daniels for Miami had maybe the catch of the year already in week one, which was incredible. It looked like Odell Beckham. Like, it was phenomenal. CJ Carr on the other side from Notre Dame, he looked good for the most part, had some freshman moments, but ultimately Miami edges out the victory 27-24 over Notre Dame. I was impressed with Miami. I wasn't coming into the season expecting much. I was thinking, well, they've lost Cam Ward, obviously. They've lost their top six receivers. It's going to be a struggle bus season for Miami, and they lived up to the hype. They exceeded my expectations massively, so congratulations to the Miami Hurricanes. They looked very good last night.
Now, trying to decipher that, is it that Notre Dame is just that overrated, or Miami is just that good?
Overrated? I wouldn't say they're... I mean, I thought
Notre
it was
Dame?
A great game. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm saying in general, Notre Dame, I believe, is overrated this year.
I don't think I would say that. But, like, for Miami, I think it's more so... Miami might have been a little underrated because Carson Beck was being talked about as the number one overall pick before last year, and most people seem to forget about that. It's amazing what happens when you have receivers catching the football. I mean, CJ Daniels, that would have been dropped last year at Georgia. They had so many drops from their wide receivers last year. It's amazing what happens when you
I just punched my mic. It's Labor Day.
I didn't know talking about Carson Beck got you at this
upset. Yeah, it got me fired up.
But it's amazing what happens when you can run the football and have receivers that catch. That did not happen last year at Georgia.
What frustrated me watching Notre Dame, you have an All-American running back in Jeremiah Love. Do you know his final stat line?
I know he had like four hurdles in the second half. That's about it.
10 carries for 33 yards. 10 carries. Meanwhile, CJ Carr has thrown the ball 30 times. That's not the way that offense should work. And the other thing about that offense is CJ Carr is not Riley Green in the fact that he... Riley Green, not the country.
One's Riley Green.
Riley Leonard, thank you. CJ Carr is not Riley Leonard in that he is a scrambler. He's a pocket passer, so why are we trying to use the Riley Leonard playbook on CJ Carr? It makes no sense to me.
It's just the way Notre Dame, that's just their identity. I mean, I think they're having a hard transition. You know, when you go from Riley Leonard to C.J. Carr, who's just making his first start last night.
Yeah.
The familiarity is last year's playbook. I mean, you can't change much for that guy.
I mean, it was very frustrating at times. I was like, hand the ball off to Jeremiah Love. He is good.
And when the one time they did, what happened? Yep. Holding. Came back.
Yep.
That touchdown.
Well, their backup is good, too. Price, he had one run for 33 yards. And I was like, well, you see what happens when you hand the ball off? They weren't ready for it. And then they didn't go back to it. They just kept passing. Jaden Greathouse didn't have a single catch last night. He's their best receiver. So, very frustrating to watch the offense of Notre Dame last night. Maybe it's a Catholic thing this weekend. The two Nashville Catholic teams get shut out, and then the team all the Catholics cheer for just does not look good offensively for the most part.
I have one more comment about Notre Dame. They take on Texas A&M. If they lose to Texas A&M, is it safe to say that Notre Dame is overrated?
Yes.
Okay.
We'll see. I think that'll be a good game. Texas A&M.
Yes or no, though, Parker? Yes or no?
If
they lose to A&M week two, is that an overrated Notre Dame team?
If they're at six, I mean, they're at six right now and they lost yesterday. If they start the season 1-2, then yes, Notre Dame was a little overrated.
Well, where are they playing that game?
believe
it's at home.
Yeah. In South Bend.
And A&M was in a dogfight with UTSA this past weekend. So we'll have to see what happens. But my question is, was Jeremiah Love still hurt? Because he was hurt during the playoff run they had last year. But why didn't you hand the ball off? 10 carries for 33 yards.
To an All-American running back, by the way.
Right. And then Jaden Greathouse not getting a single reception, but yet they were still in it at the very end, which is mind-boggling. That's why I don't think this Notre Dame team is overrated. They lost a lot of players from last year, but they still, again, it's like the Ohio State problem. They still backfill with recruiting very well. So they were in it till the very end. Just, I don't know.
Well, we got one more game in week one of college football, and that game is tonight in Chapel Hill. Chapel Bill makes his debut for the Tar Heels as North Carolina takes on TCU. Frazier, I want to give you an opportunity to walk back your take from Saturday. North Carolina's going 11-1?
No, I mean, I just said it's a possibility. I didn't say it was going to happen. I just said it's a possibility. They only have one ranked game on their schedule, which is Clemson. Clemson lost to LSU this past weekend. We'll see how that affects, you know, North Carolina going forward.
It could impact Notre Dame.
It could. I mean, I doubt it. But, I mean, looking at their schedule, like I said, they only have one ranked game. If they can take care of business, they could be 4-0 going into Clemson.
Yeah.
And if that is the case, and they only lose to Clemson by one, maybe two possessions, say 10 points, then that kind of bodes well for UNC in year one under Bill. I really do. And then after that, again, win majority of those games, maybe lose one, 10-2. 11-1, something like that. Again, that's being very optimistic.
But, yeah.
At the same time, it's a possibility. I really do think it is a possibility.
See, me personally, and I think Parker agrees with me on this one, I think they drop this one tonight.
Really?
I think TCU comes into Keenan Memorial and just walks.
Interesting. Yeah.
People are going to learn the name Josh Hoover tonight, quarterback for TCU.
Did you train him?
No.
Oh, okay.
I wish I did. I'd be much more well known if I did.
Yeah.
I have a family friend with that name. So
really?
Maybe that's him. Maybe he's out there.
Hoover. Okay.
Maybe he's out there playing for Chapel Hill. Hmm. Chapel Bill and the Gold Diggers.
Yes.
Did you see that, by the way? They're like
tried to trademark it.
Yeah. Well, they're trademarking it to create their own jewelry.
Good for her.
Good for her, not for him.
Yeah. I mean, she's just living off the coattails, which is fine. I mean, sort of fine, I guess, in their situation.
So my question is, if they get married and in their prenup, if Bill dies, does she take over the head coaching role for North Carolina?
No, because that's in the contract his son Steve takes
that's
over.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Does she have to marry him now?
I don't believe so. I think Steve...
Wouldn't that be a story?
That'd be great. America, baby. This is where legal polygamy happens.
Oh, boy.
Is Steve married? Yeah, he is.
Don't get us canceled, Connor.
Bill's son, Steve, is married. Yeah. So I guess she cannot marry him.
Steve Belichick.
Yeah.
Okay.
Defensive coordinator, I believe. You know, he was a part of that Washington team that went to the Natty and lost.
Speaking of Washington, you know who the head coach was for that team, right?
Kalen DeBoer.
We got some comments on Kalen DeBoer I want to get into.
Might as well take my victory laps.
Yeah, I think it's time to have a conversation about Kalen DeBoer and the Alabama Crimson Tide. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Our text and phone lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Shoot us a text. Give us a call. We will get to your comments next, as well as our conversation about Kalen DeBoer and another figure in college football who had a disappointing day. That's up next here on the Weekend Huddle. Connor Newt, Parker Kelly, and Nick Frazier here on 102.5 The Game. Monday edition of the Weekend Huddle here on 102.5 The Game. Connor Newt, Nick Frazier, Parker Kelly here with you. Hope you are enjoying your day off from work, if you are. If you're not, hope you're tuned in and listening to us, because guess what? We're working too. We're getting paid.
All day, every day.
All day, every day. So, the story of the weekend. Alabama, the number 8 ranked team in the nation, goes on the road to Tallahassee and gets mollywopped by Florida State. I mean, the heat is on for Kalen DeBoer right now in just his first game of his second year. I had an interesting stat for you, and let me see if I can find it. Yes, here we go. In his first 230 ranked game, I mean, take this with a grain of salt, Nick Saban versus unranked teams, 226-4. Kalen DeBoer at Alabama, 10-4. Same amount of losses in quite the opposite amount of time. So, I say this to say, what is the conversation we need to have around Kalen DeBoer? Is it time to say, yeah, he's not the guy? Is it time to give him, you know, we'll give him this year, and then if it doesn't pan out, we'll ax him? What's the awkward conversation we need to have surrounding Kalen DeBoer?
Well, I think we have to give him at least this year, because think about it. In this era of collegiate athletics with NIL, with transfer portal, no one's ever going to do what Nick Saban did, right? No one's going to replicate that.
Yeah.
And it's very unrealistic. I'd say, I mean, Alabama fans are spoiled because the newer ones, that's all they know. All they know is national championships. All they know is winning. Sometimes when you're the guy taking over for the guy, it takes a little bit. And I know that's not what Alabama fans want to hear. I understand the disappointment, losing. Nobody wants to lose. You got to give the guy some time. I think that's pretty fair to say. No one's going to replicate what Nick Saban did.
No. This is DEFCON 5. Saying it again. Last year I said it. Bama to go 7-5. Didn't quite happen. This year, that could happen again. 7-5, 8-4. Like that prediction, that is, that I made. And I think they move on from DeBoer after this season. I mean, obviously it's just one game. You call it overreaction. But think about it. They're going to win their next two games against UL Monroe and Wisconsin. After that, they got Georgia.
Yeah.
We all know Georgia's on a different level. They're on a different playing field. And they're probably going to give the business. So after that, you're thinking, man, Bama can't beat anybody that's a top-tier program. So then that's where you go to say, yeah, maybe DeBoer, this ain't your job anymore, bud. Like, that's where you got to start having the real conversation.
I'm kind of split in the middle between your two picks, because I think Parker's being optimistic on this one, and I think you're being, no, I don't want to say pessimistic, because you don't.
I'm being a realist.
I think you are.
Alabama fans know that this is not their guy of the future. This is their stopgap coach, and they have a quarterback that I don't think anybody was really on board with. Nonetheless,
and he looked bad.
Nonetheless, yeah, he had 3 sacks, 7 tackle for losses, so 10 total losses.
Yet another quarterback who thinks he's a runner, and he's not.
Yeah.
They beat Georgia last year, though.
Yeah, but dog.
With a completely different team.
Completely different team.
I'm
going to be honest with you. Ryan Williams ain't it. He should have transferred out. That dude's too small to play at Alabama, and the fact of the matter is he was hurt in that game against Florida State. He is going to get hurt the rest of this season if they keep targeting him like that. Straight up. Because teams will start to double-team him, and nobody else was catching the ball for Alabama.
What about Jeremiah Smith? Jeremiah Smith had a similar stat line to Ryan Williams.
Dude. Jeremiah Smith is in a better situation. He's at Ohio State. Ohio State is in a better recruiting situation. They're in a better schedule situation. They run the Big Ten. Alabama doesn't run the SEC anymore.
Better, yeah, but they beat Georgia last year, and
that's one game.
Who's a better option than DeBoer? Who would be a better option for Alabama right now than Kalen DeBoer? Who?
Okay, I don't know that answer, Parker. I simply don't know that answer. But the fact of the matter is, he's not their coach for the future. Simple as that.
I'm with you. I think Alabama is the kind of fan base, I'll compare them to Kentucky in basketball. They expect to go in every year and win a national championship outright. They don't tolerate failure like this. And I'll follow this up with, you never want to be the guy after the guy. Now, in the case of Kentucky, you have your guy after the guy, and that's Mark Pope, and it seems like that was the right hire. But 9 times out of 10, when you hire the guy after the guy, he's not the guy. Look, Urban Meyer was the guy at Ohio State for a long time. Then he leaves, and they hire Ryan Day. For the longest time, the flames were on for Ryan Day. People did not like Ryan Day. Even last year, the talk was, if Ryan Day doesn't make the college football playoff or even win a national championship, they need to fire him. And sure enough, you know, he runs the gauntlet and wins a national championship, and now you're kind of stuck with him. But I look at Alabama and I think they are starved for success because they've had so much of it over the past 20 years. Kalen DeBoer is a change of pace for them because he's not as successful. And they asked him about this postgame because I listened to the press conference to hear what he said. His plan, allegedly, is he thinks he can out-scheme every single coach in the SEC. I'm here to tell you, you are not going to be able to do that because the talent level in the SEC on a week-to-week basis does not allow you to do that. You are not going to out-scheme Kirby Smart and the Georgia Bulldogs. You couldn't even out-scheme Oklahoma last year.
They got out-schemed by Vanderbilt.
They did. Right here. right down the street on West End. They got out-schemed by Clark Lee. So you are not, this isn't the Pac-12 anymore. You don't have to, you're not competing against Oregon every week, who was the best team in that conference, and then the rest of your conference is Oregon State and Washington State and Stanford, teams that are below average. This isn't that anymore, pal.
What was the conversation we had with Billy Napier like 2 years ago? Everyone was ready to fire him last year, and now look at Florida this year.
They played Long Island, and they won 48 to nothing.
Yeah.
Nick Saban's not walking through that door again. Nobody's going to be able to replicate that. Alabama fans, that's a reality that they're going to have to get used to. Georgia's not going to be able to replicate that with what they've built.
Okay, let me ask you the question, Parker, because you asked me on the spot, and I don't know the answer. Who is the next head coach for Alabama if DeBoer is gone?
I don't know. That's why I'm not firing DeBoer.
Okay.
That I don't think that's the approach you should take.
No.
Well, we don't know who our next head coach is, so we'll stick with him. That's.
But you also shouldn't fire a guy a season and a game in, too.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying if he goes throughout this year and he goes 8-4, then that's it. The standards at Alabama are championship-level standards. We expect to come in, dominate the SEC every year, and win a national championship. And I understand that's probably not realistic expectations anymore, especially given the depth of the SEC. The greatest coach of all time is no longer coaching your program. I also understand they're going to have a hard time getting Kalen DeBoer out after the season. You know what his buyout is?
Like what, $70
million? $70
million. That's another reason. I don't think that would be smart, especially in this era of NIL. You can't pay $70 million to a coach that's not there anymore. How are you going to pay your roster if you're paying your coach to sit on the couch? Well,
I would kind of think that the donors of Tuscaloosa, Alabama would band together and donate as much money as possible to get him out.
Look at A&M with Jimbo.
Yeah.
They bought him out.
They're still paying him.
Yeah.
And I think they're doing all right. On paper.
Yeah, they grabbed Elko from Duke, and that turned out really well. And I don't know. I mean, yeah, money is a big price tag, but sometimes when the best decision is to pay that big price tag, that might be the option for Alabama.
Look, I'm not fully in the Nick Frazier corner of, oh, my God, fire him now, he's terrible. But I'm also not in the Parker Kelly corner of, he's going to be fine, let him finish the season, he's going to turn it around. I think if this continues, the play calling he had on Saturday was awful. His defense looked terrible, and I understand he's lighting it up in the recruiting realms, but look at the five-star quarterbacks in Arch Manning's class. How many of them have panned out so far? Arch Manning looked bad. Nico looked awful.
Malachi Nelson
is in his third school.
Jackson Arnold. Who was the other one? There was one more.
Jackson Arnold is transferred to Auburn. He looked okay on Friday night against Baylor. There's one more I'm missing. But regardless, recruiting is such an on-paper thing. You think you have your guy, and then they'll go out and just absolutely crap the bed on the field. You cannot keep a coach simply because, well, they're lighting it up in recruiting, because if they don't deliver on the field, then guess what? That is a fireable offense. Kalen DeBoer, I think, should be on the hot seat. And especially with the standards that Alabama has, they're not going to keep him around much longer. That program's not going to keep him around much longer because they want immediate success, and they are entitled to that.
Yeah, I'm telling you, that Georgia game, that's the reality check game for Kalen DeBoer. Not only for
I agree with you.
For him in general, that whole entire program. Because if they lose to Georgia, which more than likely I'd say is in the favor of Georgia after seeing what that happened at Florida State.
Yeah.
Especially,
they're playing in Athens, I think.
Yeah.
So,
yikes.
I'm not saying Kalen DeBoer is going to turn this around. I'm just saying we got to at least let the season play out. Like, if he goes 8-4, if he goes 9-3 and then loses a bowl game, okay, we can have this conversation.
No, I don't think they should fire him in the middle of the season because that only sets your program back.
But Dan Lanning and Oregon, they beat Idaho by 3 points in the first game last year, and everyone was hitting the panic button on Oregon. Then they turn around and go undefeated in the regular season. Anything can happen. That's what I'm saying.
And look, that's a fair point because week one, you've watched all these games. Offenses look sloppy. But you cannot go out to an unranked Florida State, who has been talking about you all summer, their quarterback Tommy Castellanos, he's not Nicholas, he has been talking about you all summer, and you let him back it up, you let him get to your head, and you let him dominate. So I'm saying this to say Kalen DeBoer may be in over his head. The other guy that was remarkably disappointing was Arch Manning. I want to talk about Arch Manning coming up next. What is the best case scenario for him? Is his game against Ohio State indicative of the season he's going to have? 615-737-1025 is our phone number. You can give us a text or give us a call. Our phone line's driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. We'll talk about Arch Manning coming up next here on Monday edition of Weekend Huddle. Connor Newt, Nick Frazier, Parker Kelly here with you on 102.5 The Game. Long weekend edition of Weekend Huddle here on 102.5 The Game. Connor Newt, Nick Frazier, Parker Kelly here with you talking about Kalen DeBoer and the hot seat that surrounds him. Let's get to some of your texts on the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Nick Frazier, what do we have?
Yeah, first on the list we have 7949. Says John Gruden may take over that Bama job. He's a big name that would be great in the NIL era, and in all caps, wants to get back into coaching. So, don't get me wrong. Gruden, I understand, wants to get back into coaching.
I love football, man.
Yeah. Big opening the box guy. Loves to open the box for any university out there. As for Alabama, I don't know if that box is going to open up that way. All right? I don't know if those gifts are going to be in full open arms. That's not him.
I don't think they'd immediately go for John Gruden just because he's been out of coaching so long, and that is a premier destination for coaching. However, I could see him in one of these lower SEC teams, like, no offense, Mississippi State.
Arkansas,
Kentucky. Some of these lower programs that have had success in the past, and they think that John Gruden can help regain that success. Mm-hmm. But I don't think he's destined for a premier blue blood job like Alabama.
Yeah.
That's just my opinion on
imagine
that.
A coaching duo of John Calipari and John Gruden. Imagine how great that would be for that university.
I mean, they counter each other. One's amazing and one's...
You know, we know your thoughts on Calipari.
I don't have to go into depth about my thoughts on Coach Cal.
These guys, they're not machines.
Gunner had an interesting point on the text line.
He did. Gunner said, I don't believe it'll happen, but man, it's crossed my mind that Alabama could just hand Kirby Smart the checkbook and write whatever they want for a lifetime contract. He said he could see it possibly happening.
I would think a lot would have to happen at the University of Georgia, like a relationship fracture, and, you know, maybe the university reprimands Kirby Smart for some of his culture problems he's had.
Something cataclysmic would have to happen.
I mean,
keep it under 55.
The rapture would have to occur.
Yeah.
For Georgia to get rid of Kirby Smart.
Hell to freeze over, Jesus to come back, all of it.
I mean, yes. But that said, if in the unlikely event that it does happen, I could see a scenario where Alabama says, Kirby, what do you want? We'll give it right to you. Mm-hmm. And he is the head coach at Alabama.
Yeah. Again, could be a possibility. Wouldn't say it'd be, you know, anytime soon. Just like I said before in the break, have your players keep it under 55 miles per hour and you'll be okay.
This isn't Back to the Future. What's the speed limit in Back to the Future? Isn't it 88 miles an hour or something like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, to get back. Yeah. It's like 88. We have one more, by the way. Ron on the text line said they need to at least have a preseason game or two when it comes to stuff like this. I don't know.
I mean, preseason scrimmages are fine. Most coaches don't do that anymore because of NIL, and you could have the unlikely scenario where a player goes, I'm going to transfer to this school we just played during the spring window or something. But I agree, this is why you have tune-up games in the NFL. Mm-hmm. You have your guys, your starters that you throw out there, and you say, all right, what do we have out of you?
Like, I could see one preseason game in the spring. Like, you know, all the spring games. I could see one, like, with another university, but, like, a local one. So it'd be like how Eastern Kentucky opened up with Louisville, Eastern Kentucky versus Louisville in a preseason game.
Yeah, Colorado and Syracuse wanted to do that. Remember, Dion was pushing for that. And
Fran said, nope.
Well, the NCAA just doesn't allow it, but I think that'll become a thing when they fix the spring transfer portal window.
Yeah.
If they fix it.
The transfer portal is the main problem with that. Texter on the YouTube chat says they won't fire DeBoer for losing to Georgia. However, they absolutely will fire him if he loses to Tennessee.
Yeah. I could see that.
Yeah.
And I wasn't saying that he was going to get fired after Georgia. I was saying that's the reality check game for Alabama. Yeah.
No, I agree with you. The other disappointment of the week was at the quarterback position for the University of Texas. Arch Manning goes out and just absolutely poops his pants against Ohio State. I was told he was the chosen one by one Paul Feinbaum, who walked back his take yesterday, by the way.
Bless his heart.
Bless.
And like, hey, you know, it's Feinbaum season. June to August. That's Paul Feinbaum talking season right there.
Yeah, before we get into Arch Manning, let's go to our phone lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com and welcome in our good friend Adam in Portland, who's got a Kalen DeBoer thought. Adam, good morning. What do you got for us?
Well, number one, since you hit Arch's name, aren't you glad the Titans didn't give up Cam for a bunch of picks in hopes to get Arch Manning next year?
Because, oh, yeah.
I would be so sick, dude. Like, and I feel bad for him because it's the expectations of being a Manning. How unfair is that? But, hey, you know what? You've been paid like a Manning. It comes with the territory. You can't suck that bad. I don't care how good Ohio State is. Not why I called you, though. So did you guys actually sit through the Florida State game and Alabama game yesterday?
I did.
Yes. Saturday?
Okay. So, yeah, so Castellanos, the fact that he put up billboard material and then still punched him in the mouth is incredible. What's more incredible to me is how soft Alabama's defense is. Like, their linebackers don't tackle. They are, like, soft as a Serta mattress, man. Like, it's incredible. He could do whatever he wanted to. Nobody was ever at risk of getting their bell rung. There was no pressure being brought. Like, he's got to sit back there and pick that defense apart. That's what's crazy, because I've seen Kalen DeBoer coach really good football teams, and they were never this soft. So there's a disconnect, dude. And, like, yeah, I think you could absolutely get fired in season. I don't know. Like, Alabama – I remember before Saban, dude, there was a point there where Alabama was a sorry program, and this is kind of what it started to look like, man. So, I don't know. It's weird to me to see them in this shape, but more than just letting a Diego Pavia-type quarterback rock them, that defense being soft is weird to me for Alabama.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Adam. Very good points. I agree with absolutely everything you said right there.
Yeah.
I go back to what Big Joe said. I think it was Friday.
Mm-hmm.
Guys don't tackle anymore.
They don't practice it.
They don't practice it. Therefore, it does not translate over to the game. They just don't. I don't know.
It's all about pursuit angles and making sure you hit two hands on the hip pad. That's it.
No, yeah. The defense for Alabama looked incredibly weak.
Yeah.
Florida State.
Which I thought would be their calling card, at least in that game. But
exactly.
I think the under-talked about point is Thomas Castellanos – talking all that trash in June, July, August, and then backing it up. I mean, that was incredible. Like, it's one thing to talk trash and then you go out and you lose to Alabama, but if you back it up, I mean, it's impressive.
I will say the one thing I recognize from that Alabama game, and as you know, Adam hinted at it, but the defense, when Castellanos threw the ball, I wouldn't say deep, but had some mid-range passes, he knew that they were going to back up and play a little off the ball a little bit.
They were.
And he improvised with his legs. And he was incredible. It was awesome.
It was like, I'm so sorry I'm doing this. It was like College Football 26. You know those random games you have where the defense just presses up on you and all you got to do is bomb over them? That's all it was.
Yeah.
Alabama was pressing up. They were not playing it deep. And they got torched for it. Speaking of quarterbacks who did not live up to the narrative surrounding them, Thomas Castellanos didn't because they were low narratives. Arch Manning didn't because they were Tim Tebow level narratives. Arch Manning against Ohio State, 17 of 30 for 170, a touchdown and an interception. Inflated numbers, by the way. He did not come on until the fourth quarter when it wasn't over, but it felt over. How about this? QB rating of 58. I mean, I look at Arch Manning, and granted, he did not look good at all. I think we're overreacting a little bit about him because he just played the number three team in the nation who will probably be number one later today when the poll comes out. Or it'll probably come out tomorrow because we got one more game.
Yeah.
Later tomorrow when the poll comes out, he played probably the best defense he's going to see all season. That said, he looked awful, and I thought the play calling did not open up well for him. It was way too conservative. Handoffs, bubble screens, checkdowns. It was just not an all-around good offensive performance for Texas.
Yeah. Did Arch Manning play good? Not at all. Did Steve Sarkisian call it conservatively? I thought so. I mean, they use a lot of motions and pre-snap eye candy that they just didn't use versus Ohio State. I will say, He's making his first start on the road in the Horseshoe in Ohio State. Matt Patricia, their defensive coordinator, who's won a Super Bowl with the New England Patriots, multiple Super Bowls, going up against Steve Sarkisian, who has yet to win a national championship, throwing all kinds of different looks. And I thought Dan Orlovsky did an excellent film breakdown on ESPN. Oftentimes, Ohio State would show that they're going to blitz, and then they back off and have three people guarding two receivers for the Texas offense. There was not a lot that Arch Manning could do in those types of situations, but that doesn't mean that he still didn't play good, because he didn't. But that Ohio State defense was throwing everything at him.
Yeah. The only thing I could think about the entire game was what his grandfather said. And it was, I think, at SEC Media Days or right before it.
Yeah.
They were like, somebody was saying, oh, he's going to go to the draft or whatever. His grandfather goes, no, he'll be back to Texas for another year.
He better come back.
And to me, that just goes to show you that everybody was just running the media saying Arch is the next best thing. Hearing his grandfather say, oh, he'll be back another year, just goes to show you he is not ready.
He is not 100%. Ready.
And I'm sure his uncles both know he's not ready.
He did not look like – Paul Feinbaum comes to mind, but he's not the only one in the national media that's just been pumping his tires. He did not look like the promised chosen one that we've been told he is.
And that's the thing that drives me crazy, because Arch Manning isn't putting these expectations on himself.
No.
The media is. I
think he got an unfair deal in that aspect, that we put too high of a standard on a guy who's never started a college football game.
So when he goes out and performs like this, everyone's calling him a bust, but he didn't put these expectations on himself. He has the last name Manning, yes, but if his last name was Jackson, would we be talking about him like this?
No.
But he's incredibly talented, so I think he'll be able to bounce back just fine. This was a rough week one game for him, but I think he'll bounce back just fine.
Yeah, I think a big takeaway for Arch to learn is just that last drive. I know you could say, oh, you're just nitpicking, whatever. No, but seriously, there were some passes on that last drive where they just weren't accurate. And I think he had a little bit of time to throw those balls. That one that he threw 2 yards short of the first down of the tight end, like, easily could have led him a little better. The running back coming out of the flat there, you threw it behind him. Like, those certain things, if you throw it at the right spot,
you got to hit that. Yeah, you got to hit it.
Those games are completely different if you throw them in the right spot. So,
last thing I'll say on Arch Manning before we hit the break. To your point, when he did throw a pass beyond 10 yards, that ball was wobbly. Like, it looked easily able to be picked off. Mm-hmm. Like, it was not good. So I think Arch, this was a reality check for him. It was a reality check for the media. Maybe don't pump a guy's tires just because he has the last name Manning if he's never played a college snap.
Didn't people do this with Nico last year too?
It was more your people, but
No. People like Joel Klatt, who Joel Klatt is famously known for hating on Tennessee. Joel Klatt was ready to crown him the next Heisman Trophy winner.
Yeah, well.
Just got to let these things play out.
Yes, you do. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Shoot us a text or a call. We'll get right to it. But coming up next, Frazier, are we sure we really want to do this?
I think it's okay.
You do.
Are we sure?
Trust me, you do.
I mean, you guys put up with me, so I'll put up with him. Kelly's Corner. Parker Kelly takes over the show. Coming up next here on Weekend Huddle, Connor Newt, Parker Kelly, Nick Frazier on 102.5 The Game. Labor Day edition of Weekend Huddle here on 102.5 The Game. Hope you're enjoying your day off of work. You guys have been great on the text line. We are enjoying some of the humor that's being pumped out about Alabama, some of which we cannot read over the air, but we appreciate it. That said, it's 9:45, and deep breaths, Frazier. I'm reluctant to do this, but okay. We let Parker Kelly take over the show now. For
what, you didn't like my last Kelly's Corner? I know you agreed with it. No,
I agreed
weddings.
With it. Don't play any smooth jazz under you.
That wasn't me. That was Jake.
You told him to.
I didn't. He's not very good at playing music, I will say that. But I wasn't expecting that kind of smooth jazz.
Oh, poor Jake.
What do we got for Kelly's Corner?
Why don't you go ahead?
I'm intrigued.
I'm not going to play any music this time because, frankly, I don't need music. I have a problem with college football officiating, guys. I have a big problem. This has been brewing for quite a while. So I was watching the games over this past weekend, and There were several calls that I just really had a problem with. The first one being the LSU-Clemson no touchdown that clearly was a touchdown that would have gave them a 14-point victory over the Clemson Tigers.
I know exactly what call you're going with next.
Yes, yes. The Michigan targeting call versus New Mexico. That was the next one I'm going with, but I'm getting to that one. There was a targeting call in the Michigan game. I'm blanking on what quarter it was. It seems like the definition of targeting changes every other season, which we need to get a grip on that. So that was the second call. And then the third call was the Virginia Tech-South Carolina game.
There
the touchdown to Nick Harbor that was a touchdown, then all of a sudden got called a non-touchdown. They said he bobbled it, but clearly, yeah, looking back at the replay, Lewis Riddick agreed with me. That was a touchdown as well. So here's my problem with CFB officiating, because it seems like it changes from conference to conference. The SEC, they focus on one thing. The ACC, they focus on another. The Big Ten, and so forth. We should have a national standard for officiating where everybody follows the same rules. We make, and here's the other thing. College football officials, they're not full-time employees. They're part-time.
And they should be full-time.
If they're full-time employees, you know what that means? If there's a bad call during the game and all of us are wondering why in the world they made that call, they should be held accountable for it.
Bingo.
Because coaches and players, they have to give a testament on why it was such a bad call, but if they dare criticize it, they get fined. Meanwhile, the ones that are actually making the calls don't have to be held accountable for it. And that's what I want to start seeing. And I will say, yes, a lot of this is on the officiating crew, but they're getting told from these league offices, whether that be the ACCs in Charlotte or the SECs in Birmingham, they're truly the ones making the calls. They're just using the officials as the mouthpiece. We need a national standard. We need to make these guys full-time employees. And most importantly, we want to hear from them after the games. Agree or disagree?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's transparent across all sports, right? Like basketball, I hope it shows improvement because the reviews we've had over basketball where it's just, oh, let's see if this is out of bounds and it's a 5-minute review, that should be held to the national standard we should have. But as far as football, I agree with you. I think there were some very questionable calls. And look, I'm all fine with human error. I think that's part of the game. I think that's part of the game in all sports. That's why I'm so against the MLB going with robo-umps, which I don't think they'll ever do because of that human aspect of baseball. But as far as football, yes, there are going to be some mistakes. That said, these are part-time employees of the NCAA or whatever respective conference they come from. Side note, I was on the way home from the show on Saturday. I was like, how am I going to listen to the game? No one's carrying it. I ended up listening to Buckeye Radio, and they were very upset that this referee crew in Columbus, Ohio was from the SEC. So
it tends to lean that way, especially if it's a Big Ten SEC matchup.
I would think that's part of the deal, though. You get to play at home, but we're bringing our referees. So side note on that. But yes, I agree with you, Parker. I think the fact that these referees are part-time employees and are not full-time and are not making salary, they're just being paid game by game, I think that has some factor to do with some of the bad officiating we've had. Frazier, what do you think of that?
I mean, it makes sense. You know, when the NFL had their lockout with the referees, I feel like the NCAA, not NCAA, but just college athletics in general, is kind of leaning that way.
Yeah.
Like, if coaches and players are all upset with how referees are officiating games, I could see the referees holding out for more money because players are getting more money through NIL. They're getting more money through the universities.
Yeah.
These coaches are getting million-dollar deals, tens of millions of dollars of deals here. So, like, I think you'd have to play a little bit more towards the referees. I was looking online, the ACC college football referee salary for 2025, $53,000.
Yeah, they can totally hold out for that.
Yeah, and you're holding a simple false start penalty that maybe not was a false start and or a pass interference call. It wasn't pass interference. And it's dictated off of a player that's making $1.4 million to another guy that's making, I don't know, $800,000. So I don't know. That's just something to look at.
No, I think we should, across all levels of sports, a referee should be a full-time job. Look at high school. High school football, the reason they play games on Thursdays sometimes is because there's a referee shortage.
Mm-hmm.
Why? referees aren't being paid enough. They're being paid game by game, and even then, some of them are being lowballed.
And oftentimes, they hold the fate of their games in their hand. So they should be held accountable for it, and they haven't been, but yet these coaches and players are being asked these questions, and they can't comment on it, or else they get fined.
Right.
It's a messed up system.
It is, and you're right. It should be a full-time job, and because it's a full-time job, they should be held more accountable for these things. Now, if they make a bad call, they're not fined. They're kind of publicly scrutinized on the interwebs, but they're not reprimanded by the conference. They're not reprimanded by the university. Maybe the university will send some appeal to the NCAA saying this was a bad call, but nothing ever comes of it. They're not going to go back and reverse the results of the game based on one call. So, yes, it should be held as a full-time job, and referees should be held accountable. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. You can text or call us. But coming up next, we welcome your text and calls, very much so, because we want your audience participation in this one. Bold Take Row, give us your bold take, sports, non-sports, whatever you want to give us. That's coming up next here on the Monday edition of Weekend Huddle. Connor Newt, Nick Frazier, Parker Kelly here with you on 102.5 The Game.